So in recent years, I've become quite interested in soils and human health issues, and have had a long time interest in soil science history aspects. So this seemed like a really good place, a good setting to take a look at this particular book in. As I've been doing research in recent years on the history of soils and human health work, Lady Eve Belfour's work is one of those that I came across. And Belfour herself was not necessarily, I guess, a traditional person to be making advances or to be promoting ideas that we are continuing to work on today. She was born into a wealthy family, a politically influential family. That title, Lady Eve, is there because she was British nobility. The politically influential. She had an uncle who was the Prime Minister of Great Britain, so that's kind of influential in the political sense. And she was educated, although she only at the bachelor's, at the undergraduate level. She was not, did not go beyond that. Now, for somebody who was politically connected, who was in the nobility, she chose a rather unconventional line of work. She took on her own farm after she graduated from Reading University, studied agriculture there, took on a farm when she was done. The farm itself was rather neglected when she inherited it, and she spent the next several years exploring ways to really enhance the land, improve the soil, trying to find ways that produced more nutritious products from that soil. In the 1930s, she came across a lot of the organic agricultural ideas that were being promoted by people like Howard. She was also influenced by people like McCarrison, who was a medical doctor in this area at the time, who was really promoting links between soils and human health. So she became very involved with that movement, and in fact was one of the founders of the Soil Association in Great Britain in the middle 1940s. So just a little bit of background on Lady Eve herself. Now the book that I'm going to talk about today, The Living Soil, originally published in 1943. This is actually the cover that I've got up here is a picture of the 1951 edition of the book that was published later. There have been at least two reprints in 51 and in 2006, and there are multiple editions of most of these reprints. One of the things that's most impressive probably about the book just in general is that it's probably the first book, it's the first one that I've found at this point in time that is devoted expressly to the links between soils and human health. You can go into Howard's work, for example, and he has a chapter in his 1940 work where he talks about soil human health connections, but that's the point of this entire book, is the idea that healthy soils lead to healthier products, to healthier people. You know, that's the overarching theme of the entire work in this particular case. In terms of what you'll find in it, if you decide to pick it up and do some reading, it starts off with a discussion of what soil is, and particularly the threat that things like erosion pose to soil fertility. Then she looks at human illness, how inadequate nutrition from the foods we consume can have a real impact on the health of humans. Goes through various lines of evidence that soil fertility is very important to food nutrient content, to human health. And then ends the book with conclusions that, you know, we really need to have a deep look at our agriculture, how we're doing things, and maybe reconsider just exactly what it is we're doing. And you know, you look at that and you might think that a lot of that is lines up quite well with a lot of discussions that are happening today, but this is like 70 years ago, you know, that this is being put up, this is being written about. So you know, definitely, you know, ahead of her time in that respect. You know, she and the others who were involved in this. Certainly the ideas expressed in Living Soil, they're not unique to her. As I said, she was highly influenced by people like Howard, by people like McCarrison. You know, she was not be academic in the sense of having advanced educational training, but what she was somebody who was very passionate about what she did. She had devoted her life to farming, to trying to improve her land, trying to improve the produce that came off of that land, and so she took a lot of things that had already been were being discussed amongst these groups that she was involved with now. A lot of correspondence, for example, between her and Howard or her and McCarrison, and she took these ideas and put them together in a way that made them accessible, especially to the general public, in ways they really had not been accessible previously. And so I guess kind of to summarize these major accomplishments, I think one that's also is well worth mentioning is that we have a woman who is very involved in some major things at this point in time, and we still do, in fact, a little quick shameless plug. We've got a poster up in the sessions that are starting right now looking at gender issues in soil science here in the United States, and women still are not well enough represented in our numbers. So here's a woman who's doing things that women of her day were not particularly noted for doing. Again, this may be the first book devoted to that topic of soils and human health, so a milestone there. She is today recognized as one of the leading figures in nurturing the organic movement within the English-speaking world. So that's a quick look at the living soil. I think I'm locked up.
We have a few minutes before the next presentation is scheduled to occur, so if anyone has questions for the first three speakers, please feel free to raise your hand and ask them. Go ahead, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Did she actually do any research, or was she...
She became involved with the foundation that put together. She became involved with some research in that, and not necessarily always led by her, but very involved in running of it and lining up of that work. So she was more the practical agronomist than she was the research scientist.
And you had a question behind you? You go
yes,
first.
Yes, Alfred Huffman, UW Medicine. It's a question for David. So David, you said a hidden gem, and I think those are papers are called hidden gems, and there's quite a few of them. You said that the technology had to pick up before the science could be executed or something. You said something in your conclusions, the technology, the science was ahead of the technology. Is that correct?
It seemed to be in this case.
Yes. So my question is, are we currently in another state where the technology is ahead of the science?
Oh, as opposed to the
yes.
science? I think, I think sometimes you can make that case, and I think there is often a tendency when new toys come along that everyone wants to play with them, and that's driven more by desire to play with them than it is good reasons.
So are we creating hidden gems at the moment, or you don't think we create them?
Well, so I'm getting old, but I tell all my students that all cool ideas were developed in 1950s.
I think the 1930s too.
So it's kind of like this cycle. So
I read 2010, sorry.
Yeah.
For the 2010.
There was another.
Yeah, there's a question back there.
Well, comment. And question for Eric. So my understanding is that Lady Balfour was involved with starting the Halfley experiment, the long-term experiment that ran for about 30 years. Is that discussed at all in the book? And if not, where would one read more about that?
Halfley is not discussed in the book that I remember reading. I'm not sure off the top of my head where you would read more about Halfley. I know she was involved with it, but off the top of my head, I'm not sure.
Yes.
I have a question for Dr. Weil. I was wondering
errors, but he did have some replication. It looked pretty close.
Yeah. That's what I was fascinated with, the analog nature of the instrument. He's really kind of a Rubik's gadget. Not as sensitive as those N15 measurements. Extremely impressed with those. It's amazing how many small ones you can pick up with that.
Okay, another question.
Another question for Ray. So, was there any practical application of the burst effect during his day?
Oh, yeah. This was,
so, how did they apply?
In that part of the world, it was very important to plant early so that you would have plants growing when you had that flush of first CO2 and then nitrate release. And the problem for the farmers in the region is that the soils are dry and hard during the dry season. And this release happened with the first few rains. That moisten the soil, and then you would start tilling it, and it would be weeks before you got it tilled and planted, and the plant came up, and by that time you'd have, you know, weeks of heavy rain and it would wash it out. So there were systems of early planting ahead of time to try to get the, which was a little risky, to try to get the plants growing.
That was intuitive to the farmers. Was
yes,
there any,
yes.
Were there guidelines based on the vertical?
Yeah, so they were recommending it was early. There was some tradition, some of the tribe.
We have another question here.
Yeah, I have another question. Maybe for all three presenters then. So this is about the origin of ideas to some extent, and often there was someone before any one of them. There might have been someone before Birch. There might have been someone before Don Kirkham, and before. Are you aware of
that? Am I aware of that someone earlier that discovered this? Actually, Birch.
Well, or differently worded, you know.
Yeah, Birch cites some people, and he says, well, this effect was mentioned by, I can't remember, but there was
another
site.
Russell.
It wasn't Russell, but Russell was certainly apparently aware of this.
I think Watson was mentioned.
Oh.
The earliest one, I think, is like 23 in soil science.
You mean for the Birch effect?
Yeah.
For the effect of wetting and dry soil.
And then there's probably someone before that.
There probably is. Any time that I get what I think is a brilliant new idea, I find out there was somebody else's brilliant new idea a long time ago. Yeah.
And thus the qualification may be the
right.
First book. The first
right.
One I found
yeah,
so far.
Yeah,
and certainly with Belfour, the influence of people like Howard, like Harrison, you know, others that were in that, you know, in that crowd in that time. So absolutely, you know, a lot of these, sometimes I think the biggest thing that happens with a breakthrough is somebody either looking at something a bit differently or assimilating information or